Well, hello again, and this time it's Earl Oaken's Christmas Gramophone Show. Everybody has to do a program about Christmas, and I'm no exception. So what can I do that's different? Well, first of all, I'm just going to play the best Christmas tracks of which I'm aware on the 78, and perhaps as a secondary idea, I'm going to point out how important Jews are to the enjoyment of Christmas, starting, of course, with a gentleman called Jesus Christ, who, of course, was Jewish. He couldn't be a Christian because to be a Christian, you have to believe that he rose after 3 days. And, of course, he hadn't died yet, so therefore there was no such thing as Christianity while he was alive. But apart from him, who else has helped our enjoyment of Christmas? Well, let's begin with a great tenor called Richard Tauber. Richard Tauber was part Jewish, and of course part not. And because he was part not, he was quite happy to sing the most famous of Christmas carols. This one was a German-written song, written at the beginning, as I understand it, of the 19th century, by a gentleman called Gruber. And of course we know it as Silent Night, Holy Night. In German, it's called Heilige Nacht, Stille Nacht, Heilige Nacht. And I don't know of a better recording of this wonderful old carol than by Richard Tauber. So, here it is. There you are, a lot of bells. You'll find that bells seem to reappear in a lot of these Christmas recordings. But in any case, that was Richard Tauber, the great tenor, and he was born in 1891 and died in 1948, lung cancer, sadly. And that was recorded probably in Berlin on the 25th of June 1929, right slap bang in the middle of the Weimar Republic, which was a flowering of all sorts of culture in Germany, soon tragically to be cut short by the appearance of Hitler on the scene, and indeed with his Jewish background, Tauber had to flee both Germany and his own beloved Vienna, and he settled in London. And indeed, towards the end of his life, I believe he recorded that same carol in English. Now, before I go on, perhaps I should say that this is my, in a sense, my Christmas present to you all. It's free, of course, as all of my shows are, and all of them should be still up on this site. Perhaps in return you'd give me a little Christmas present. What do I want? Well, if you've enjoyed any of these shows, please would you send emails to all your friends and recommend my site to them so that other people can enjoy all these wonderful old records. That's what this is for, to share my record collection with the world, if you will. Well, that said, 3 years after the birth of Richard Tauber in England, there was born another man of a completely different nature. His name was Thomas Henry Sargent. You won't have heard of that name because he wasn't known under that name. His stage name was Max Miller, and he became just about the best known variety comedian in the whole of the period from, what should we say, the 30s to the 50s, when variety gradually was by that time already in decline. He certainly survived long enough to be on TV, dressed in a suit that looked like it were made from a roll of wallpaper, and with his trilby and his cheeky, slightly cockney character, always on the edge of saying something totally obscene but never quite saying it, he became the absolute darling of the variety-going public. Well, here you have the other side of Christmas. He's talking about and singing about a Christmas party. The actual name of the track is The Christmas Dinner. It was recorded in 1937. It's absolutely typical Max Miller, and I commend it to you. Here it is.
Hello, boys and girls.
Hello, Henry.
Hello, Max. What are you going to have?
I'll have a double. Where's Flossie?
She's gone to powder her nose.
Hello, Auntie. Give us a kiss.
Oh, you shouldn't have done that.
Well, you shouldn't stand under the mistletoe. The last party I went to, a girl said to me, "Aren't you ugly?" I said, "I can't help the way I'm born." She said, "No, but you can stay in the house." Where's the vicar?
I'm afraid he's late again.
He was late last year, but we had a lot of fun. I'll tell you all about it. Our vicar always comes to dine with us on Christmas Day. So Mother stuffed a lovely turkey ready for the fray. Said, "Father, we can't wait for him. He's late again this year. So Mother, you start counting. Let me know how many's here." There were 29. All sat down to dine as Father carved the turkey nice and brown. "Who wants a bit of stuffing? Don't all speak at once." Mary said, "I do, I've not had a bit for months." "Granddad, he can have the frame to keep his photo in. I'll have the wings and toes." The vicar put his face through the door and cried, "Save me the parson's nose." Then we played games. We had blind man's buff. I had my sweetheart's father blind all night. Then someone suggested kiss behind the chair. I didn't like that game. I lost 3 teeth. Then we had another game called Touch Me and Go. My sweet Dutch brother touched me for 7 and 6 before he went. Then we played sliding down the banisters. I invented that game. That was my idea. My young lady went first. She slid down the banisters. She didn't like it. She didn't speak to me for the rest of the night. Well, I didn't know there was a nail in it, did I? Then we started singing. Charlie sang The Village Blacksmith. He sang it so real you could see the sparks come out of his mouth. Well, after that, the vicar said I must be going. He said, "My congregation's waiting. I shall have to go." Then Mary Ann, she kissed him underneath the mistletoe. The news was spread around the town, it's very sad to tell. 'Cause someone told the sexton and the sexton told the bell. He wished us all a Merry Christmas, then we all sat down. Everybody started singing, "Knees up, Mother Brown." Then someone pulled his chair away, he had a nasty fall. He cried, "You can keep your Christmas pudding." Well, he shouldn't have come at all. There were 29, all sat down to dine as Father carved the turkey nice and brown. "Who wants a bit of stuffing? Don't all speak at once." Mary said, "I do, I've not had a bit for months." "Granddad, he can have the frame to keep his photo in. I'll have the wings and toes." The vicar put his face through the door and cried, "Save me the parson's nose."
There you are, Max Miller in his prime. A few little things about him. He apparently was well known for being really tight. He never gave money to anybody. The only thing he was potty about was apparently parrots, of all things. and he kept parrots and was mad about parrots. What can I say? The one thing he did occasionally give money to were charities dealing with the blind, because apparently during World War One he did lose his sight very, very temporarily. And was so frightened by the experience that obviously it focused his mind, and he always supported blind charities. He married quite a posh lady. He wasn't quite the man of the street cockney that he seems on his recordings. But whatever he was like in real life, what we have is a whole bundle of recordings and indeed films of him as probably the most important comedian of his time. Now, in 1870... there was a gentleman born called Bransby Williams Fares, P-H-A-R-E-Z. It's a strange name, Fares, and which is probably why he dropped it. He became an actor, but soon realised that with the burgeoning of the musicals, if he could find a way of performing in those musicals, he could probably make a very good living. And so he developed a whole range of comic and straight monologues. And he became known as a monologuist on that musical circuit. It's a form of entertainment which would seem really strange now. It's sort of, I don't know, maudlin, bit too over-sentimental, certainly occasionally too serious and moral for our tastes today. But in his time, he was a major star, and he lived a long, long time. He was born in 1870, as I said before, and died in 1961. I remember him on television in the 50s, when I was a little boy, doing probably part or all or even more of this following monologue than he does on this record, which was made in 1912. He was probably best known for this monologue because it's his version of the Christmas Carol. It's a sort of one-man version of Scrooge and his experience with the ghosts. So, by real contrast with the last recording, here is Bransby Williams in 1912 performing part of his classic one-man version of Scrooge, and this is called The Dream.
Jacob Marley, spirit of Jacob Marley, he leaves me. Spirit of Christmas, past has stalked before me and shown me my own wasted life. The spirit of Christmas present stands before me and shows me my own self. A wicked, grasping, clenching old miser. Spirit, is true, tis true. It leaves me. A third spirit approaches, the spirit of Christmas yet to come. This spirit will show me what may be if I do not reform. Yes, spirit, I follow thee. It leads me to a lonely garret and stands beside a bare uncurtained bed upon which lies the figure of a dead miser, unwashed, unwept, uncared for. Oh, spirit, to what a rich end this man's goal has brought him. Yes, spirit, I follow. It leads me to a lonely graveyard and stands beside the grave of that poor wretch. I am about to learn his name that is engraved upon the stone. I am afraid to learn it, but I must for the lesson it may teach. Spirit, I am prepared. Show me the name upon that stone. But Ebenezer Scrooge! Oh, spirit! Spirit! Speak! Say it's not true. I am not that man who lay upon that bed, unwashed, unwept, uncared for. No, spirit! Say it's not true. Speak, I pray thee. Why do you show me these things? Spirit, give me the chance to reform, that I may live again the past, the present, and atone in the future. Spirit, speak. Why do you show me these things if there's no chance of reformation? Only give me a chance. No. I've seen no more. I've seen enough. No. I want. No. Mercy.
Bransby Williams, I suppose one can easily imagine somebody on a current comedy program saying something like, oh, for goodness sake, take him away before his overacting becomes increasingly apparent. However, he was a star of his day. That's the way acting was in his time, and he was one of the best around at that sort of thing. Nevertheless, there are other things which emanate from that era which are as just wonderful today as they were the moment that they were put on wax. Just 3 years after Bransby Williams, Enrico Caruso, the greatest tenor of them all, was born. 45 years later, within the last few years of his career, with his voice perhaps not quite as lissom and effortless as it had been, he was nevertheless able to produce an incredibly wonderful performance, a definitive performance, this time of a Christmas carol. It's a carol which is much better known in the United States than it is in the UK. It was written by Adolphe Adam, the French composer, and on the label it says Cantique de Noël, which, as far as I can understand, simply means Christmas carol. You should know this melody, certainly if you're American, but I don't think you'll be aware of any better recording of this wonderful carol than that by Enrico Caruso. Even though the top notes, as I say, are not quite as effortless as they once had been, this is just wonderful. I also have a special sentimental connection with this recording because when I first started collecting opera records, when I was about 5 or 6, I found a copy of this record in Portobello Market with, to be honest, a little moon-shaped gap at the edge so that I couldn't play the very first bit of the groove. But nevertheless, I loved this record from the moment I heard it. I only paid 6 pence for it, and I love it today. So, ladies and gentlemen, I take you back to the 23rd of February 1916. This was Caruso's third attempt at recording this carol that day, and, well, it stood the test of time. Enrico Caruso. Noël. Did I say 45 years later? He was actually 43, not 45, when he recorded that. Not that it affects the quality of the recording one whit. Now, Christmas songs tend to be divided into two main sorts. I'm not talking about Christmas carols now, but Christmas songs. Firstly, there are the sort of songs that make you feel all warm and fuzzy, and you feel as if you're around the Christmas tree in front of a coal fire opening presents. And then there are the other sort, because Christmas can also be a little bit of a sad time when you remember Christmas past and possibly people who used to be with you, like grandparents, who are no longer around. And there are quite a lot of songs of both types, which we all love. I'm going to play you one of the most loved of the first variety right now. And we can also return to the theme of the importance of Jewish songwriters and singers, because this song was written by the great jazz singer Mel Torme, who was indeed a multi-talented person. He was always a composer, arranger, drummer, musician. He was all sorts of things. He wasn't just about the best male popular singer. I personally rate him above Sinatra and everybody. He also wrote this song, and he wrote it in the 40s during the summer, I read somewhere, and it was very hot and sticky, and along with a friend who helped out with the lyrics, who was called, I believe, Bob Wells, summer of 44, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, he wrote this wonderful song, which he simply called the Christmas Song. And for some unknown reason, at first, decided he wasn't going to record it, but gave it to, I understand, Nat King Cole. But I'm going to play you the writer himself singing this somewhat later on. So without more ado, I give a recording of Mel Torme, whose dates, by the way, were born 1925, died 1999, and it's one of my great regrets I never heard him perform live, let alone met him, because I'm one of his biggest fans. As I say, Mel Torme will now sing for you his own Christmas song.
All through the year we waited, waited through spring and thaw, to hear silver bells ringing, see winter time bringing the happiest season of all. Chestnuts roasting on an open fire, Jack Frost nipping at your nose, Yuletide carols being sung by a choir, and folks dressed up like Eskimos. Everybody knows a turkey and some mistletoe help to make the season bright. Tiny little tots with their eyes all aglow will find it hard to sleep tonight. They know that Santa's on his way. He's loaded lots of toys and goodies on his sleigh, and every mother's child is gonna spy to see if reindeer really know how to fly. So I'm offering this simple phrase to kids from 1 to 92. Although it's been said many times, many ways, Merry Christmas to you. Love and joy come to you, and to you your Christmas too, and God bless you and send you a happy new year, and God send you a happy new year.
Mel Torme with the Christmas song, perhaps better known to some of you as the Chestnut song, maybe. I myself have learnt to play that song, and it's a joy to play because it takes you a while to learn the chords, because it's not exactly the most obvious chord sequence, and it changes key and all sorts of exciting things, but it just makes it really fine. It's a great song, whether it's about Christmas or not. However, I did mention that there were two sorts of Christmas songs. The other one is more of a tearjerker, and who could be more efficient at making your eyes start weeping than Judy Garland? She herself had a somewhat tragic life. She was born in 1922 and died in 1969. Seems like yesterday. In 1944, when she was still a young woman, she starred in one of the great Hollywood musicals, which was called Meet Me in St. Louis. And during the story of the film, they are threatened with having to move from St. Louis to New York, which is supposed to be a great sort of chance for her father to progress in his career. But of course, nobody really wants to go, and they all pretend that they do. And that leaves Judy Garland the chance to sing this wonderful Christmas song, which is called Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. It was written by Martin and Blaine. I don't think either of those two were Jewish, but you never can tell. It's just a wonderful song. I love this recording. I love the film. And if you don't know it already, you're about to love it too. Judy Garland singing Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Well, what with Mel Torme writing the Christmas song and Judy Garland singing that song in Meet Me in St. Louis, 1944 seemed to be a pretty good year for Christmas songs. It was, of course, virtually the end of World War II. D-Day had already happened. and they were on their way to something to look forward to in 1945. It's difficult for people of my generation to imagine what it must have felt like, but that Christmas must have been a special one, surely. Well, let's go back again. In 1884, there was born a very great singer. If you were to speak to a certain generation of Irishmen and ask them who the greatest tenor in the world was, they wouldn't say Caruso. The chances are they'd probably say John McCormack, who certainly was not Jewish. He was Count John McCormack. He was ennobled by the Pope himself. John McCormack was born in 1884 and died in 1945. For the first part of his career, till, shall we say, around 1920, he was one of the great lyric operatic tenors. But one feels that he must have overstretched himself in some of those roles, because by the 1920s, his top range was beginning to go and it began to develop a wobble. He must have realized this, and he changed his career and became one of the most loved song recitalists in the world for the next, well, until his death in 1945. He specialized in all sorts of sentimental Irish songs and religious songs and things of that nature, though not neglecting some art songs by Schubert and other great classical composers. He knew what was good. He pleased his audience, but he also made great recordings of classical music, even when his top range went. Well, in 1926, he'd already recorded this in 1915, but in 1926, with the benefit of the new recording medium, which was electrical recording, Victor decided to make a big thing of Adeste Fideles, or in English, O Come All Ye Faithful. This recording, which he made in Latin with, to my ears, a strong Irish accent nonetheless, was some affair, because he's accompanied not only by an orchestra, but by something called the Trinity Choir, which turns out to have been a choir put together using many of Victor's top recording stars, themselves famous, people like Olive Klein and Lucy Isabel Marsh, who were amongst the most popular of the, we say, lower price labels that Victor used at that time. A Red Label tenor himself is in the chorus, Richard Crooks, and so forth and so on. This is some choir. Anyway, this is Adeste Fideles, as sung by John McCormack on the 1st of October, 1926. And the bells return, ladies and gentlemen, the bells return.
Thank you.
John McCormack. Well, now we're going to combine one of John McCormack's biggest fans with somebody called Israel Isidore Balin. Well, you can probably guess that he changed his name as well. And of course, I'm talking about Irving Berlin. He was the longest living of anybody involved with this whole program today. He was born in 1888 and he died in 1989. And John McCormack's biggest fan? Well, that was of course Bing Crosby. And well, I think you can probably guess what's coming. In 1940, Irving Berlin sat down and wrote a song called White Christmas. He seemed to realize immediately that he'd written something really special, but it took a while before the song caught on. It was used in a film with Bing Crosby and Fred Astaire called Holiday Inn, but it wasn't the biggest hit of that film. But Bing recorded it in 1942, and within about 2 or 3 years, the song had been number one about 3 times. I think it's about the only time when something went up and down to number one more than twice. However, something apparently happened to that recording, and generally speaking, when we hear Bing singing this, it is the later 1947 recording that we hear, because he was asked to re-record it, I believe, because there had been some damage to the original master. Be that as it may, that's the recording I'm going to play you now, recorded on the 18th of March 1947. It's White Christmas, of course, and of course it was again featured in the film of that name with Danny Kaye even later in the 50s, and I understand it's just about the biggest selling single there's ever been. I'm not sure even if the Beatles or Elvis Presley or Michael Jackson or anybody has ever outsold this track, and no doubt it's still selling every year. So, ladies and gentlemen, I couldn't leave this track out, could I? This is Bing Crosby's classic recording of White Christmas by Irving Berlin.
Be well.
Bing Crosby's classic recording. And with that, we're almost at the end of my Christmas gramophone show. I do hope you've enjoyed it. I hope you've approved of my choice of Christmas tracks, shall we say. And to remind you of what I said at the beginning of the show, if you've enjoyed this Christmas present, please give me one, and indeed your friends, by passing on the link to this site so that other people can share in listening all the wonderful tracks that I find within the shelves of my 78 RPM record collection. Well, I haven't quite finished. As I have been saying, I wanted to point out the importance of Jewish people to Christmas, starting with Jesus himself, of course, but in more recent times, such songwriters as Mel Torme and, of course, the incomparable Irving Berlin, who was, of course, Jewish. Well, it so happens that I too am Jewish, although I've been an atheist since I was 8 years old, so I thought I would join in the tradition, if I could, by writing a Christmas song. And mine, I suppose, comes into the same category as the more sad type of Christmas song epitomized by Judy Garland's rendering of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. My one is called Christmases When We Were Young, which pretty much says it all. And with that, I wish you a very Merry Christmas. May it be very happy and not too full of sad memories. And may 2010 bring you and I all the dreams that we're hoping might come true. And as I say, until January the 1st, when I'll have a whole new program for you to listen to, I say, as always, au revoir and all the best. Merry Christmas, everybody.
Once long ago, Christmas always led to laughter under the Christmas tree. Then we were young, we thought happy ever after, spoke of our lives to be. Then all our dear ones still were our. Now, once again, we're among familiar faces, though no more children we. Though the years may swiftly may we always raise a glass to the Christmases when we were young. Thank you.